Guess Boogie Podcast contains explicit language and content that may not be suitable for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, welcome to the Guess Boogie Podcast, where two married guys share stories of paranormal encounters, urban legends, true crime, and other scary things from around the world. I'm Andres.
And I'm Kevin.
And I feel like I'm breathing really hard. Why is that?
Stop breathing. Welcome.
This is the 29th episode. The next episode is going to be in Spanish. So in January, you guys are going to hear us in Spanish.
Yup. Starting off the new year. So what's been going on?
Not much. Starting a new job in January. Pretty excited. Hopefully 2022 brings us a better year than 2020 and 2021, because it's just been one shitty year after another.
Yep.
What's been going on with you?
I mean, I got a new job in the end of November, so I've just been vibing. This episode comes out like, well, it might come out on time, depending on how fast I can edit it. I mean, I haven't been there long. I mean, not really much has been going on with me. A lot of eating.
I'm excited to start the new job.
Nothing else to report.
I'm excited for us to go to Chicago.
Oh, yeah. Going to Chicago for Christmas.
Hey, we'll be there next week.
Is this your first Christmas in Chicago?
Yes.
Wow.
Breakfast at Tiffany's. Wait, that's not a Christmas song. Why did I think Seven Rings is a Christmas song?
It is, actually. No. Oh, yeah, it is. Seven Rings by Ariana Grande. Yeah, it was a Christmas song. Dangerous Woman, Christmas song.
Wow.
3435, Christmas song.
My favorite Christmas song. 3435 is 69.
Any song is a Christmas song if you play it during Christmas.
Yeah, I guess so. So at work, we emailed somebody and asked if we could watch Christmas movies instead of like your normal like five channels we're allowed to watch. Mm-hmm. And they said yes. So we've been watching Christmas movies the last couple days. But question, why is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
I don't know. I don't
get it.
To be honest, I've never watched Die Hard, and I feel like I'm at a point in my life where I don't want to watch it. Like, I missed my opportunity. It was my birthday the other day, by the way.
Yeah. Happy birthday.
Thanks.
My computer just turned off by itself for no reason. But when I'm telling you, my shit is falling apart. I didn't even fucking do anything to it. It's fully charged and everything. There it is. It just like turned off for no reason. All right, so anyways, I feel like the more time I'm spending on TikTok and online, the less and less I'm starting to like seeing Karen videos. Why? And people complaining about their jobs. It stresses me out. It was like before I did it and watched YouTube videos and compilations and stuff before, because it was like a way to like cope. Or, like, just, like, a de-stressor. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when I'm watching these videos, I'm getting, like, PTSD almost. Because I'm like, oh, my God, I remember that in retail and stuff like that. I don't know if anybody else feels the same way, but...
Did you see that video of a woman in... What was it? Bath & Body Works? And she was, like, fighting with employees. I was like, oh, my God. It really is that time of year where people just don't care to be decent human beings. Like, when they go shopping,
yeah,
they will fight for the littlest thing. Like, why aren't you taking my coupon? Like, so I think we said it last year, too. But, you know, solidarity to fucking retail workers this year. Be nice
to the retail workers. There is a shortage, and there's a shortage of people, so...
Yep.
Let's just try to be nice to everybody. Let's just be nice to each other and then sing Kumbaya when you get to the store really loudly.
No.
To where other people can't hear each other talking.
Okay. Ah, there goes Leo. Are you ready to jump into your story? Do you have anything else to report?
Actually, I'm pretty boring. I'm pretty boring
this month. Yeah, me too. This month has been pretty uneventful. Since the last time we recorded, there really hasn't been much change. I mean, kind of getting acclimated to the new job.
Yeah.
What else? The new Pokemon game came out, so I... Oh, and I'm. This is like my last week for the semester, so I'm dying to just finish everything.
Oh my god. I see you stressing and pulling your hair out every day.
I do.
Well, yeah. I actually picked American... Animal Crossing.
Why are you always saying it?
American Horror Story Crossing Horizon? I don't know. What I really don't know.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
I don't know. But I picked up Animal Crossing again, and it's pretty fun. I had a bunch of cockroaches in my house. They were sending me letters. They were like, bro, your house looks bad. There's cockroaches in it. And then afterwards, they were like, okay, we're gonna, obviously, this isn't working. We're going to stop sending you letters.
Yikes.
Everybody's like, bro, you've been gone a year. Where have you been? And I'm like, just in my house. Which, true enough, here too, we've like not really gone out since we
don't have roaches here though.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's because we have Leo and Venus. They eat them all before we get home.
That's true.
They crunch and munch on them. Delicious. Yep. Little protein snack.
Quench.
Have you seen how like there's like cockroach milk now, and it's supposed to be like more nutritious than like any other like nut milk?
Yeah, because it has higher amounts of protein.
Oh god, I wonder what it tastes like.
I do not wonder that.
Because cockroaches stink. They have a smell. Do they? Yes, they have a smell.
What do they smell like?
Gross. Like gross cockroaches. They smell like bugs. Bugs have a smell too.
A bug.
What a bug. There was one here when I was working at a retail store. It was a convenience store. It was like a standalone building. You know which one I'm talking about.
Okay.
And during the summer, you know how we get like those, we get overrun by those little black crickets like from Mulan? The little black ones, they jump around what everywhere. They got into a wall at work and they died behind the wall, and the stench was fucking crazy.
How do you know it wasn't the stench of death, of decomposition?
It was the stench of the crickets dead behind the wall.
Okay, but that's not the scent of the crickets. That's the scent of dead crickets.
This, I don't know, decomposition to me smells like decay, like sweet, almost sweet. It's weird. Like when you smell like a rotting carcass, it's like sickly sweet to me. I don't even know how to describe it. It's disgusting. It smells sweet. Like it's a very unmistakable smell. This was not that. This was a little different. Okay. This smelled hediondo. I don't even know how else to describe it.
Musty, just fucking... and dusty and crusty.
Oh, they had to like take the sheetrock out and then vacuum all the crickets behind
hell
the wall.
Hell no. What the
it
hell?
It was crazy. And so, anyways, long story short, cockroaches also have a smell. And they poop everywhere, and they walk all over your food. And they, like, get in your hair with the little fucking hands and little legs.
Stop, no, stop, everywhere. Stop, stop. I just realized that one of my coworkers has a phobia against roaches.
Oh, that's right.
Maybe... I don't know if she's going to listen.
Ooh. Okay. So, back on track. I don't know if you guys remember last year when I tried to do a Christmas episode, I ended up doing the Santa suit slaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Because every time I looked up like Christmas ghost or spirit, it was like the ghost of Christmas past. It was like always Scrooge. It was Scrooge every time. And I'm like, God damn it. And so finally I got a little like creative with my searches, like with my word searches. So I found 4 Christmas themed scary ghost stories.
The Christmas special.
Yes. So just like the Halloween one, I'm gonna read to you guys some like stories that I found online that I thought were like really interesting or whatever.
Okay. How exciting.
So
yeah, I mean I think a lot of people like the Halloween one. So
yeah. You know, and I will say that for the Halloween episode, I feel like we've been doing this for a while now, and we watch scary videos all the time, and, like, I'm always constantly reading, like, scary stories or horror, and to the point where, like, not a lot of stuff is scary to me anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think I have a really hard time, like, deciding, like, I'm like, oh, this is actually scary.
Like, oh, versus... is this fucked up enough? Like that?
No, no. It's the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. This is so fucked up, it couldn't be real. Almost. I feel like the more unsettling stories are, like, yes, they're incredible, but, like, not so much that they couldn't be true.
Yeah.
Like, these stories where people were like, you know, and I'm not trying to judge anybody. You do what you want. But, like, people that are like, I fell asleep and shifted into a different dimension of, like, red paint, and there was a demon there, and blah, blah. I was there, I swear. My body, my whole body, like, teleported. And then I'm like, okay, those I think people will have a harder time digesting and actually believing and being creeped out by them. Mm-hmm. Versus, like, there was a demon in my closet. My mom saw the red eyes when she walked in. That to me is like, more, like, yes, realistic. It's like unsettling. Like, I could have sworn that happened to me when I was a kid, you know, stuff like that.
I think there's, with stuff like that, there's a layer of understanding, relatability, realism. Because, like you said, usually things that we find scary are things that it's like, oh my god, that can happen to me.
Yes, like when they're relatable. Now, don't get me wrong, sometimes I'm in the mood for, like, a little, you know, astral projecting story where somebody gets Power Ranger powers and they save the world from, like, this horror monster coming from another dimension. Sometimes I'm in the mood for those stories.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but that reminds me. Someone on Twitter was like, why is my mom paying $40 a week to a astral projector tutor? And she's like, and they were like, she doesn't even physically go, like, she meets up with him in astral projection.
And she pays him
$40? I don't remember if it was $40 a week or $40 a month, but I was like, $40 is $40.
And you know what? Here's another one of those things I'm judging. I'm judging her, but at the same time, I can't astral project. I remember sort of doing it when I was younger, when I was having, like, those lucid dreams or, like, out-of-body experiences when you're sleeping. Mm-hmm. But I can't, like, actually go outside of my body and visit somebody else. I've never been able to do that. So, to me, it's very incredible. But you know what? To her, maybe she's having a nice little ghost chat with her instructor in a Starbucks.
He's teaching her.
And the lady that's sitting there is like, why is my shoulder cold? And it's the ghost. They're sitting there.
They're not ghosts. They're astral projections.
Their souls are out of their body, floating around in a Starbucks. Beautiful, like Insidious. Wonderful. Ooh,
you know, oh, man. Insidious that did it so movie, good.
God. The when layers.
Like, astral projection, hold on. This is good.
The layers to that movie is crazy. I don't know if anybody else does it because Kevin and I love to do this. We like to watch a movie and then immediately afterwards, like, rush home from the movie theater or, like, change the channel to, like, the SmartCast and watch a YouTube video about the movie explaining the layers.
Yep.
Every fucking time. Because undoubtedly, there is something that you missed or a reference that you don't have the information to, like, go back to. And it's just very interesting, like, how smart some of these writers are. Mm-hmm. And how smart, like, the mythology for some of these series are.
Yep.
And it's like, you can never, like, really gauge how deep it is until you actually, like, somebody that actually knows and can delve into it, then it just gets really interesting.
Yep.
So.
Sorry, not to steer you off your tangent, but go ahead. Continue.
With my stories?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is my Christmas horror stories special. My first one is from the No Sleep Reddit thread by user Master Sword, and this is a Christmas ghost. And they say, and it begins. Okay, long story incoming. Growing up, I always felt like the house I lived in was haunted. Feelings of being watched, weird noises, just creepy vibes in general, especially in the basement and top floor of the house. It wasn't a terribly old house. Built in the 1940s, and my mom, her two sisters, and my grandma and grandpa moved into it as children in the 1950s. Only one family lived in it before them, a mother and a father and one daughter, more on that later. So I never thought of it as a classic haunted house. The things just felt too new to have a bunch of restless spirits in it. While growing up, nothing too outrageous ever happened to me. Just like I said, weird vibes and creepy feelings of being watched. I am now 31 and haven't lived in this house since I was 19. This last December, I brought my girlfriend home for Christmas to meet my family. She and I have talked about creepy experiences before, and she told me that as a child, she had a lot of creepy experiences growing up. Seeing and talking to people she could clearly see that no one else could. Dead people, apparently. This terrified me. But she explained that it hasn't happened for many years, but she feels in tune with others and the world around her. I should also mention she told me her mother had a lot of these same experiences growing up. Now when I bring her home for Christmas, I didn't even think twice about any of the things she told me about her experiences growing up or the background of the creepy vibes I got in the house as a kid. So to the unexplainable part, ... The top floor of the house is basically just one big room with two beds in it, at the opposite side of the room where the stairs are. If that makes sense, basically once you come up the stairs, you have to turn and walk all the way across the room to get to the beds. So we were upstairs laying in bed trying to fall asleep. I can feel my girlfriend's body relaxing and starting to fall asleep just as I am. Right at the point where what sounds like an extremely loud, fast-running footsteps come from the bottom of the stairs to the top and then to the foot of the bed. We are laying and I feel like a small hand grabs my foot. I jerk awake and look around with my eyes instead of sitting up as I'm a bit terrified and I don't see anything. This scares the living shit out of me and I can feel my girlfriend jerk awake as well, but neither of us move or make a sound. We lay in silence for a little while and I finally muster up the courage to ask her if she's awake. She says, yes, and then asks me if I heard and felt that too. I, trying to rationalize what just happened but still be objective about the situation and say, what do you mean? She tells me, it sounds like someone ran across the room and grabbed my foot. I confirm that, yes, I did hear and feel that. We both kind of nervously laugh about it and start trying to figure out what could have caused it. Now, I should have mentioned earlier, I have a little brother that is 11 years my junior who still lives at home. He isn't prone to pranks or scaring people, but I immediately think he has some hand in this, but I cannot rationalize a way he could have grabbed my foot and slunk out of the room and down the stairs without being seen or making a sound. I finally tell my girlfriend that I'm going to go downstairs and see if anyone is up or if they heard anything. I put on the TV in the room and she nervously tells me to hurry up. I get downstairs and see my brother half asleep eating some late night snacks and watching TV. I ask him if he heard anything or was making noise down there. He kind of looks at me in a sleepy haze and says, what are you talking about? No. He wakes up a bit after looking at me and seeing I'm in a bit of a scared state. I tell him what happened and I can clearly see that he is now freaked out. He proceeds to tell me that after I moved out of the house, the weirdness apparently intensified, but he didn't want to bring it up and scare my girlfriend. He had never brought any of his creepy stuff up with his friends, but apparently one day one of them was using the downstairs bathroom, and as they were washing their hands, they looked up in the mirror and saw that what he described as a little girl standing in the shower. This creeped me out a lot. He then proceeds to tell me that my mom had a party recently where she invited a psychic over to give everyone readings. When my mom walked into the room to get hers, the psychic asked, who is that little girl with you? Mind you, I'm standing in my underwear with a t-shirt on in the middle of the night hearing this for the first time and it's pretty unsettling to say the least. I decide to keep it to myself and go back upstairs and talk to my mom in the morning about everything. I go back upstairs and tell my girlfriend I don't have a rational explanation for what happened and for us to try and get some sleep. We decided to leave the TV on as we were still pretty spooked out. We lay there for what feels like forever and finally start to drift off to sleep again, and then suddenly an extremely loud bang, bang, bang happens right next to my head on the wall where we were laying in bed. I immediately sit up and yell, leave us alone, and then lay back down. My girlfriend is in a soft whimper and I'm absolutely beside myself with fear. She ends up falling asleep after a few hours and I remember the sun coming up finally before I fell asleep for a few hours. The next day, I bring all this up to my mom and she looks at me with the strangest look and says, I know, it's gotten really weird here since you moved out and I think I'm starting to understand why. She tells me about seeing a small floating light in her room at night sometimes, the feeling of someone like a small child size tugging at the bottom of her shirt, and then she drops a huge bomb. When she and her family growing up moved into the house, my grandma and mom were digging up the backyard to put in a garden. In the back part of the yard, as they were digging, they found a small box with some badly worn scraps of paper that they couldn't make out, and a jar with what looked like a dark, thick liquid in it that they couldn't make out. At the time, they didn't think anything of it, other than it was a bit strange, and threw the box and its contents away. She and my grandmother believe, and this is all purely speculation at this point, that the girl who lived in the house before us got pregnant and got rid of her baby herself, for fear of being a single mom in the 40s and buried in the backyard. So yeah, there you go. Fucking mind blown at this point for me. What caused everything to ramp up? I have no clue. Maybe having my girlfriend in the house who's in tune with that sort of thing? I don't know. Regardless, it was terrifying and completely unexplained, and I'm really nervous about going home for the holidays now again. Thanks for reading.
Oh my god. Wow. Interesting. Why do you gotta bring up a story with another fetus? Like the Halloween special. That's gross. But good job.
I don't know. I feel like stories with dead children are very unsettling to me.
I can see that. Thank you.
They like really creep me out because it's like, to me, there is no greater evil than harming a child or a pet because they can't defend themselves.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess like that's like a fear deep in my head that somebody's going to hurt our cats or hurt one of our nieces and nephews or another child. And it just like, it creeps me out.
Well, I'm sure parents can sympathize.
Yeah. I don't know. What are you creeped out by?
Nothing.
Nothing.
A spider.
Wow. Yeah. Actually, yeah.
That's it.
Crabs. Lobster.
Yep.
Anything spider-like.
Yep.
Okay. Next one is from R No Sleep by user Death Hamster. And it's called A Christmas Ghost Story.
A ghost.
I have to admit, I'm not a fan of Christmas. Not due to any Scrooge-like tendencies or anything, but because of what I saw when I was 7. I was very excited to see what I was going to get on Christmas Day, you see, so I crept down the stairs at 2 or so in the morning. The grandfather clock in the hallway was slowly ticking. I remember it only too well. I found myself shaking as I turned the living room doorknob. Was I that excited? Why did the metal feel so cold? So as to not wake my parents, I slowly pushed the door open. It would squeak if you did it too fast, and crept into the living room. It was dark and cold. I mean, so cold I could make out my breath and what little light was there. Was the heating broken? The switch to the dimmer lights was next to the door. I turned it on and slowly turned the dial. In the diminishing gloom, I could make out the armchairs and the Christmas tree, beneath which I could already glimpse the presents. And the leering, skinless face that was now just an inch away from me. Its pupil-less eyes seemed to stare straight through me as its stench hit my nostrils, like rotting meat via burnt ozone. The thing reared back, its lipless face falling back behind the ragged hood it wore. It turned away and lurched and limped forward the tree. I could see more of it now. It was stooped and withered, emaciated and cadaverous, draped with the rotting rags of what I guess must have been a robe. The thing seemed mesmerized by the tree, its head swiveling eerily from side to side as it contemplated what was before it. Then it turned and looked directly at me, lifting a long bony finger up to its face where its lips may have once been. My mouth was agape. I was rooted to the spot. I tried to scream, but no noise came out. Finally, I managed to slowly retreat from the living room, turning off the light as I went. I closed the door quietly and crept up the stairs, too petrified to do anything else. I ran to my room and hid under the covers. Only then did I manage to finally silently sob with fear. The next morning, I put on a brave face and pretended to be excited as I unwrapped my presents with everyone else. Mum must have known there was something wrong, as she asked if I was okay. I lied and said I was just tired as I couldn't sleep the night before, as you do when you're 7 and Christmas Eve. She hesitated for a moment but brushed it off as we picked up all the torn wrapping paper left behind. But all I could think of was that thing I saw the night before. I barely played with my new toys. I just kept seeing its face every time I closed my eyes. As the years have drawn on, I've pondered this in some detail. We've forgotten what Christmas really is. It is how we used to survive the darkest, grimmest time of the year. That's what all the tinsel and merrymaking and Santa Claus all stems from. The need to shut out the darkness and the howling blizzard outside. Yet I think there is something else too. All that crap about Christmas being magical is true. We dress it up with elves and reindeer with red noses, but it's more than that. There's a reason why we used to tell ghost stories at Christmas till Halloween took over. It is a one point of the year where the boundaries between this world and the others are at their thinnest. No wonder they have a festival and nativity this time of year. Consciously or not, we're warding off the horrors that seeps into our world during the Yuletide. Maybe all the rituals, tacky though they are these days, appease the things that wait and ward them off another year. What's a Christmas tree but an old pagan totem decorated in candles, a ward or an appeasement? These days I just blot it out of my mind and pretend I'm Buddhist or something, but there's one last thing I will never forget, all those years ago. The next night, the scrawled note I found under my pillow, It just said one word. Shh.
Wow.
I thought this one was very interesting because it was like talking about the totem, the Christmas tree. Like a lot of Christmas things are very ritualistic. The tree, the mistletoe,
I mean, the for lights. Being a supposed Christian holiday, it did take a lot from paganism.
It's very, very, very interesting. What else was it? Also, so I read in this story, I read the part that it was talking about how that they used to tell ghost stories during Christmas before Halloween took it over. So I took the liberty of actually Googling that. And it turns out that it was a very well-known custom for a really long time to tell ghost stories on Christmas, like Christmas Eve.
Wow.
It was like you would sit around the fireplace and you would tell ghost stories and stuff like that before you went to bed.
Yeah.
And there's actually a Christmas song that I saw. I should have put it in my notes. But there's a Christmas song that makes a reference to telling scary stories before you go to sleep. So I thought that was very interesting because...
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, no. To us, that's not a thing. That wasn't something we practiced.
Oh, yeah.
But it looks like it was really popular like before the 80s, basically. Like they did it every Christmas. In the
U.S.?
In the U.S. And then a lot of other parts of the world. Wow. So that was very interesting. I did not know that. And so that was, I mean, I learned something new.
Yeah.
Okay. You're going to have to help me with this one because I don't know how to pronounce it. This one is posted in Our Ghost Stories by Denisara33.
Hold on. Let me pull it up.
It's the Yovla Stalu.
Where's that from?
I don't know. It was really good though. I think it's Finnish.
Yeah, I was going to say that looks...
It's so when I looked up in the comments of this Reddit thread, it was talking about an ethnic group in Finland, the Simlin or something like that. Was it
Sami?
Yes, the Sami.
Yeah.
And so this story is from the Sami. Now I remember correctly.
Okay.
This is a folktale from the Sami. So it's called Yovlast.
Oh, well, here's a fun fact. Here's my addition to this, since I can't help you with that pronunciation, since I don't really know anything about that language. But the Sami people are an indigenous people from northern Finland and northern Sweden. And like, well, same, northern Norway as well. But in Frozen 2...
Is that the people that are in there?
Yep, those are based on the Sami people.
Wow! I mean, you told me that before, but I didn't put two and two together. Anyways, let's get started. Okay, so I want to preface this and say that I don't think that this person's first language is English. And so I'm going to try my best to read it. So this is a story about a boy named Biera and his encounter with a Yovla Stalu. The story is a bit brutal. The story takes place in the 1800s. There is a small village where a 10-year-old boy is living named Biera. He lives with his parents and his two sisters, and one older and the other younger. It's 23rd of December, and the family is preparing for Christmas. They are all cleaning their house and cleaning outside the house, picking up and storing their stuff that's outside. The whole family work hard, but Biera is playing outside and not helping them at all. His mother asks him to help, but he just plays with his wooden reindeer. His mother says, "Come help, or else Yovla Stalu will come and get you." Biera just laughs it off. He has grown old enough that he doesn't believe in the Yovla Stalu. His whole family tries to warn him, but he doesn't care. Then he gets an idea. What if he proves to everyone that Yovla Stalu isn't real? He says, "I'll go and clean up by our firewood. I'll be right back." He runs behind the pile of wood, and instead of cleaning, he throws wood along the ground. He then runs back and says he is finished. Night falls, and the family goes to sleep. But Biera doesn't sleep. He instead sits and waits, convinced that the Yovla Stalu isn't real. He lays down and waits. He can't wait to laugh at the others for believing in such nonsense. He sits and hears the wind blowing outside, but then out of nowhere, the wind stops. There is silence. Then he starts listening in case he hears something. Then suddenly he hears something. It's someone yoiking, but it's a yoik he has never heard of before, and the sound is getting closer. Biera thinks that it's some drunkard arriving late. He lays down again, but the sound is coming even closer. It stops, and he can hear someone walking in the snow and pulling something. He hears a voice, but isn't sure of what it's saying. Then the footsteps start coming towards the house. He gets scared and hides under his blanket, pretending to be asleep. Now the thing is right outside the door. It opens the door, and Biera can barely see through the blanket. It's a huge person, quite old, with with an old fur coat, old gapmagat, which is shoes made out of reindeer fur, and an old red hat. The thing looks around the house. He then walks over to Biera's little brother, Giovanna. He lunges at the child, grabbing his mouth and covering it. He holds Giovanna tight before pulling out a rusty knife. He takes the knife and stabs Giovanna in the stomach. He then picks up the child and holds him above the head, sucking out the blood and guts. Biera is about to cry, but has to sit still, so the thing doesn't notice him. The Yovlostalo carries Giovanna out of the house. Biera stealthily looks out the door to see what happens next. His eyes turn wide open as the thing is holding Giovanna by the head. While he wiggles and tries to break free, the Yovlostalo starts to talk. "Little boy, why don't you give me a gift this Christmas? Start screaming. Scream for your parents. I want to hear it." Giovanna starts to scream while Biera watches in horror. Yovlostalo then pushes both his hands and Yovna's head just gets cracked. The Yovlostalo then takes a wooden spoon and starts eating Yovna's brain like soup. After he is finished, he stuffs the body in a bag and walks off. The Yovlostalo then jumps on a sleigh that is pulled by 100 mice before disappearing back in the forest. Biera goes back inside and cries the whole night. The next day, the others wake up, but don't say anything to each other. Just sit there in silence. Biera goes outside, not even a bloodstain, but there is a bag with Biera's name on it. He opens it, and inside are a bunch of fish bones. Biera went and followed the tracks in order to find the Yovlostalo, but he was never seen again. So what is the Yovlostalo? He is basically our Santa Claus, but instead of having reindeer pull the sleigh, he has 100 mice and lemming pulling it. He goes between houses and gives out presents. For naughty children, he gives a bag full of fish bones. But if he were to get stuck with his sleigh, he will go inside the house and take the youngest person in there and kill them before eating them.
Wow. Okay.
I had never heard of this before. I heard of Krampus before.
Krampus.
Yes.
Eating brain like soup. Why do I feel like that's a recurring theme in this podcast?
The sopita.
Jail.
Literally jail.
Yeah, I've never heard of that either. That's weird. But yeah, it's giving Krampus, it's giving Santa Claus, it's giving a bad time.
It's giving Hannibal Lecter.
It's giving Hannibal Lecter.
One inconsistency that I saw is that at first it says he has two sisters, and then it's like his little brother. So I think it was a little brother and an older sister, what it was. So there's three kids. So just to clarify that. The last story, we're going to leave on kind of a good note. I don't want to leave you guys scared for Christmas in case you're listening to this on Christmas Eve. It's called Grandpa Came to See Me for Christmas. It was posted in Paranormal Encounters by user chaos_breezy. This is a hard story to tell because it was my best and worst experience dealing with the supernatural. It's the best because it proves not all ghost stories are about vengeful spirits and dark shadows that go bump in the night. It's the worst because, well, just read for yourselves. It was a week before the first Christmas after my grandpa died, and I had stayed the night at my grandma's after we'd gone Christmas shopping the day before. My grandma was still taking it hard, and I'd been trying to help cheer her up. We had just gone out to do more shopping for gifts, boxes, and paper, the usual wrapping stuff. Then we went to McDonald's to grab some takeout for lunch. When we got back, we ate lunch and watched Christmas movies in the living room till my mom got there to pick me up. I bet they watched Die Hard.
It does sound like
And that. Who calls McDonald's takeout? British people?
I don't
know. I'm just saying, I just know. Got McDonald's. I'm like, I got takeout.
Don't they call it something else over there?
McDolan's?
Yes.
I'm just kidding.
You got it.
Anyways. I guess all that shopping wore her out because halfway through the movie we were watching, my grandma fell asleep. As I was sitting there, I started to think about my grandpa. We were always really close, and his passing really hit me hard. But I was trying not to show it around my grandma. I was missing him a lot, and I didn't actually want to stay over at my grandma's house as much as I used to, because being there brought up all those memories of him, and it just made me miss him more. I never went into his bedroom anymore because it was just so sad. While my grandma was sleeping, I tried to pay attention to the movie, but all I could think about was my grandpa and all the fun stuff we did for Christmas, and how I just wanted to see him again. Then all of a sudden, the room started to feel cold. At first, I thought it was a draft, but then everything felt heavy and it got quite quiet, real quiet. The clock stopped ticking. No car noises. No nothing. It was like the whole world had just stopped. It looked like all the color had started to fade away till everything had just turned gray. Then my whole body felt like pin prickles, and it felt like someone was watching me. As I looked up, I almost screamed in shock. There in the doorway that led into the hall was my grandpa. He was just standing there smiling at me, wearing his favorite cream color brown pinstripe short sleeve button up shirt. Blue jeans, brown belt, white socks, brown loafers, and brown glasses. The only thing different was a kind of glow around him. I sat there frozen for what seemed like an hour, then I started to stand up. I don't know why, maybe to hug him or maybe touch him to see if he was actually there, I don't know. But the second I got to my feet, he was gone, and the world went back to normal with all the sounds and color back like someone had just hit the unpause button. I just stood there for a second, then realized I was crying and went to get a tissue. An hour later, my mom came and got me. She and my grandma talked for a bit, then I stayed quiet debating whether or not to tell them what happened. I decided not to say anything to my grandma just yet, but told my mom everything on the car ride home, and she noticed I was nervous about something. My mom was so shocked she had to pull the car over. She asked me like a million questions, mostly if I was positive on what I saw, and each time I told her yes, and describing the whole thing over and over again. I then started to cry, and she hugged me to calm me down, even though she was crying too. When we calmed down, she told me it was okay, but never told my grandma about what I saw that day. After that, I still visited my grandma, but never by myself, and I didn't stay overnight again. The weirdest part of all of that was that even though I was freaking out at what I saw, a part of me wanted to see him again.
Wow. That was a good story.
Yeah, so this one, I felt like adding it in because I looked at this user's post history.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the only ghost story. Wow. Everything else was pretty like commenting on like a Reddit thread about cars or...
So you think it was like authentic?
Yes.
Wow.
I do. I don't know. Yeah. Whenever I read, like when I choose stories, I also look at people's post history. Because if they're just posting about ghost appeared and ate my foot, not clickbait, ? Like I'm just like, no, I'm moving on. This is... No. Yeah. I'm like very selective.
Mm-hmm. Like anyone can write a good scary story.
Yes,
but it's the ones that are like more authentic that
yes
are better.
I feel like I focus on what's wrong with the story more than what's right.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyways, so yeah, that was my four Christmas stories.
Well, good job.
Thank you.
Not to be emo on Maine or anything, but I know that like Christmas and like the holidays is some of the hardest time of the year for anyone that has had anyone pass away. And I know like for COVID, like, or I guess living through COVID, like there have been a lot of people that have passed away. And I think we've mentioned this. I don't know if it was on the podcast or in person. I don't think people have really come to terms or like realize the magnitude of the people that have passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people haven't really dealt with it emotionally. Because like you said, there's a worker shortage for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
If you can imagine how many people on the front lines have passed away.
Yeah. And the thing is that like when you bring up COVID numbers, they don't seem like they're that much. But when I talk to people, obviously like in the line of work that I have, I talk to a lot of people all day.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody always knows, like, somebody close to them that has passed away because of COVID.
Yep.
And to me, like, every time I see somebody, like, close to them passed away because of COVID, and then I look at the numbers, and I'm like, that's so weird, because I feel like every person that I know knows somebody close to them that's passed away, and it just, like, I can't math that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how do we all, like, know someone that passed away and the number doesn't match?
So. But it does, though. Like, if you think about... like, it's easy to just say that it's a number on a screen, but each one of those numbers is a person. Each one of those numbers has a family. Each one of those numbers has a family that knows someone. So, like, me, for example, I don't think I have anyone in my family that has passed away from COVID, but I know a lot of people in my life that have had someone that passed away.
So, what I mean by that is that I guess I feel like I hear more people passing away from COVID than is like the number is like small for me. It's mm-hmm. too small. Like too many people have passed away from COVID.
Yeah.
Like to me, that number's not right. It doesn't, like, that number is too small. The weight of a human life, like, summed up in that number, like, it just, like, it doesn't math in my head. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, it's like you said, like, people don't understand the gravity of how many people have passed away from COVID. It's just, I don't know, it's just crazy to me.
So, yeah, not to be emo so soon in the episode, but you know what? Hug your loved ones a little tighter this year.
We need to bring it up. I mean, it's like that time of year. We're getting into the holidays, you know. Some family members were a lot to some people.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, we should always make sure to give them the recognition that's due.
Yep.
So, what do you have for our palate cleanser?
Ooh, where's my phone? So since we last spoke, I've watched, or I guess, wait, since we last recorded, sorry. Since we last recorded, I've watched the Selena series.
Finally. I watched that with you. I finished it.
So good. Iconic. And we, well, I mean, we've talked about, like, how big Selena would have been had she not died.
Yeah.
I mean, she was at the same age as Madonna. And if you think about Madonna and how much she's accomplished in her life.
She's still going.
She's still going. Selena, I feel like we could have had that too, where
so slowly
she would have been one of the pop girls. She would have been one of the pop girls with Tejano and Cumbia on her arsenal.
You know, honestly, I feel like when I listened to her sing in Spanish, the music she was singing in English didn't match the range or the talent of her voice. So I think eventually, now, this day and age, I think she would have ended up singing neo soul. She would have been right up there with SZA. She would have been singing like very similar to like now and stuff like that. I don't know, just because she had a very like soulful voice.
Yep, I see that. And I feel like, not to talk shit about other Latina artists currently, but like I feel like we haven't had a Latina artist like singer with that type of range.
Yeah.
Or at least not that I can think of right now. Or just that
grit, I think. Because it's like when, honestly, like Kiki Palmer sang a version of her song. And I feel like only black women.
It was so good.
Yes. I feel like only black women can do her voice justice almost. Like
Miss Solange.
She did.
Miss Solange did it good.
She did that. What version of that was that? What's the name of that song?
I Could Fall in Love.
I Could Fall in Love, and she did it live in France, and it was like, I still go back to that video watching it.
Icon. Iconic.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just being biased, and we like put her up on a pedestal because she passed away, and we grew up with her, but well, no, I don't know. No, not
really. I think the show did a really good job to show that even like the first few episodes, you saw that she was struggling to kind of get her name out because they weren't that one. There were not many women singers. To that magnitude, and two, I feel like a lot of music in Spanish was underappreciated, and I feel like now recently, we've talked with your cousin Adrian that was here like last week, that I guess was it 2 weeks ago or something, but the only type of recognition or award shows before were just like Premio Lo Nuestro, and they were very like, they were very quick, not mainstream.
Yeah.
And it was just until recently, and I would say like within the last 20, probably less years, that music in Spanish slowly started getting more mainstream, especially in the U.S., that it kind of joined like the urban category of award shows.
Well, it's because I think like specifically the genre of music that's become really popular in the United States is the more urban.
But that's the thing. Urban is so general. It's not even specific.
It's like
it just kind of encompasses any black or brown artists most of the time. And I don't think that's fair.
Is true.
To think that Beyonce is constantly put under like R&B and hip hop. She's pop. Yeah. I'm sorry, but she's pop. They only ever put her in that category because she's black.
I mean, do you remember Feifei Dobson back in the day?
No.
So Feifei Dobson is she's half black, but she sang punk music, and she's from Canada. So whenever I watched Degrassi, whenever we were like Nick and Knight, you know, me and my sister, we no, were like,
I was a good kid.
We were watching The Nanny and stuff like that. Like, no, they would have music videos in, you know, in the middle of that.
Yeah.
And Feifei Dobson, they did her a disservice because they wanted her to be an R&B artist. And she's like, I don't like that music. I am Avril Lavigne. She like sounds a lot like Avril Lavigne.
Yeah.
Like, it was that type of music. Like, rockera. Soy rockera.
Soy una pinche rockera.
Yeah.
That's what she was saying. And she never. Canadian.
And even now, she does interviews and she's like, I never took off because how they treated me. They didn't treat me and take me seriously as the artist that I wanted to be. And they typecasted me in this, like, black girl that needed to be an R&B artist.
Yeah.
And that's not fair.
And I think that's kind of what I was getting at, how it's just recently. Literally recently, within like the last 5 years, I would say that music in Spanish has become like a thing, and I think it really kind of started with Despacito.
Yeah,
I talk shit about that song all the time, but really the service that it did for music in Spanish is that it catapulted it to a mainstream.
You know what? I don't want to talk about that because I hate Luis Fonsi. He can suck a dick.
Okay, okay.
Luis Fonsi is a piece of shit.
Okay,
and if anybody wants to know why. I don't want to go into it a lot right now, but Adamari Lopez, when he was married with her, he cheated on her while she had cancer and then divorced her because he's like, you got fat from your chemo. So we're going to go separate ways. Like, you don't satisfy me as a woman anymore because you're not a woman anymore.
And I bet everyone in Latin America was like, absolutely. That is a woman's role. He is so right. Anyway.
No, fuck Luis Fonsi. I can't stand the ugly motherfucker to this day. Till this day, I'm sorry, primos and primas, if y'all like him, but I personally, I cannot stand him.
No,
I can't look at him.
Right. I mean, not to get off too much of the tangent, but really what I was kind of getting into is that it's just recently that a lot of artists in Spanish have been taken seriously to the point where they're their own category. Although sometimes it's not the same genre per se. And I mean it more in like award shows or like mainstream media, like J Balvin,
Maluma,
Bad Bunny. Some of it is reggaeton, some of it is hip hop, and it all gets lumped into like Latin music, and that's fine, I guess, because it's progress. It's baby steps compared to not even having a category of their own.
Now we have the Latin Grammys too.
Now the Latin Grammys are a thing.
Yeah.
So basically, in short, the Selena series was really good, and I feel like maybe I was kind of already had a preconceived idea that it was not gonna be good. But that last episode when she was walking into that hotel, I was like,
please stop. Selena, spoilers, stop.
What the fuck? It's the same in the movie that came out like she died 30 like, years ago.
She died 30 years ago. No, don't spoil it for anybody that hasn't seen
spoilers.
The show.
Just spoil, you know, the show. Are you
the
serious?
The only thing that my only gripe with the show is that Selena was a human being and she was flawed, and I wish they would have showed more of that.
In the show, I think they kind of did. I really loved how they... She was a little girl. She was a girl. She was, like, in her teens. And I think, like, one scene in particular when she was, like, practicing kissing on her hand, I was like, that's such a, like, an adolescent type of thing to do. And I feel like they portrayed that perfectly when she was like, she was a little girl, she wanted love, like these ideas, like romanticized that she wanted a boyfriend and things like that. Sometimes I felt like maybe she didn't really want the fame that came.
It was the dad pushing them.
Yeah,
I got that feeling too. I feel like they did a really good job in beginning to unwrap the controllingness of the dad. Like, yeah. I think that they sugarcoated all of the characters and their flaws because it's a TV show made from them, for them, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a tribute to Selena. Mm-hmm. So that was my only gripe with it, that the characters are a little too...
Squeaky clean?
Yeah.
Yeah, squeaky I see clean. That.
There are a few times where I was like, you know what, Suzette? I can't stand you right now. I can't stand you, Suzette.
They would throw in a little, like, ooh, a little character development. Ooh, she's not so perfect.
Selena, look, you guys. Can't like him. He's going to ruin our career for us.
Yeah.
That was just like, girl, you're so annoying. Go do something.
Anyway. So along with that, we recommend it if you guys haven't seen it. The Selena series on Netflix. Another series that I just... Listen, during Thanksgiving break... I took advantage And I didn't do anything.
Kevin se dio vuelo,
I turned,
as my parents say.
I was going to say me aproveché. I was like, I turned my brain off. I head empty. So I also watched the series Trece, which was recommended by one of our listeners in an email, Michelle. Thank you, Michelle.
Hi, Michelle. Did we talk about this last episode or no?
We talked about the email that we got that she was recommending it to us. Okay. I finally got to watch it, and let me tell you. So, the way she described it, I mean, you've watched it before I did, but
yes.
She said, I have trouble watching it because it's like all the scary stuff that we would hear as younger kids. And it's like, that's primarily why we kind of started this podcast to begin with, because it's like, we kind of do like sharing those scary things that we talked about as kids. Like La Llorona and stuff like that. That's the biggest one that I could think of. El Cucuy is another one. It's like the boogeyman. So that's kind of what it reminded me of when she said that. So the show Trece, it's animated like an anime style, but it's basically about Filipino mythology and
check folklore. It out. The Filipino folklore is very rich too, and I feel like
it's so good.
I love the food, I love the people, and I feel like I'm partial just because we have a shared trauma. It was Spanish like
colonization,
indigenous people colonized by the Spanish and exploited. Yep. So yep. And I feel like, I mean, I'm like, they get it, and so it's like, I don't know.
It is true. I feel like a lot of Filipino people that I've met, there's kind of always that
it's like nod,
like a distant cousin type of feel.
Yeah.
So, to the Filipinos, you guys are primos, primas, and primes too. So
yeah, and I feel like there is a lot of crossover with Spanish because of like all the Spanish that was brought over by like the colonizers.
That was imposed. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that.
So what you got next? What you got next?
Oh, sorry.
Oh, actually, I actually wanted to talk about something a little quick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I've been seeing a lot of stories on TikTok about like people that, well, like millennials from the United States or like, you know, younger Gen X or like older Gen X. So what they're doing is they're selling all of their belongings. They're obtaining a permanent residence status, or they're obtaining their Mexican citizenship and they're moving to Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Therein lies the problem. They're moving to towns and exploiting the people that are there. Retiring. They're taking their money. Obviously, like, the dollar goes a long way in Mexico. And if you're living out in, like, for example, a rancho somewhere, obviously that money's going to last you a long time because the amount of things that you require in a rancho, it's, like, very self-sufficient. You don't need a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that money's going to last you a long time. So what they're doing is they're starting businesses. They're exploiting the people. They're not paying very well. And they're not learning the customs. They're not learning the way of life. They're trying to basically come and Americanize these towns. And so there's a lot of indigenous like creators on TikTok that are talking about these issues that are happening in Oaxaca, that are happening in Baja California del Norte y el Sur. They're just coming and displacing these indigenous people, and they're not asking, like, what is your way of life? Is it okay that I come here and bring this business? Is it okay if I learn how you do things? Is it okay if I learn your cuisine? Like, the thing about it is that in some social issues now, like BLM movement and stuff like that, people are at the point that are like, it is not my job to teach you. You need to do the education by yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's geared and moved more towards that. But this, like, influx of, like, American people moving to Mexico and exploiting indigenous people is so new that a lot of indigenous creators are like, ask us. We can tell you how to do it the correct way or the way that is beneficial for the community and yourself.
Yeah. If you're going to do this. Like, you're moving to a community, and how are you... disrespectful from the beginning.
Yes. And so it's like they're still at the stage where this is fairly new, so they want to educate people, and they're not tired of it yet to where they're like, you need to educate yourself, don't ask me about it, it's not my job to do that for you, which is true, fair, right? Here's one thing that really bothers me. They are not calling themselves immigrants, they're calling themselves expats. the word immigrant to them is so disgusting because of the connotation that they've given it here in the United States that they refuse to call themselves immigrants. God. They call themselves expats. Of course. I wanted to talk about that.
Disgusted.
I'm just like, this is late stage colonialism. Like, it's still, they're still colonized. There's still colonizations.
Literally, they fucking
still
are.
Colonizations happening to this day. And I think it's fucking crazy that people are like, things like that don't happen anymore. Honey, it's right now. It's happening right now.
What in the white supremacy? What in the white supremacy?
It's happening now. What do you mean? Wake up. It's happening now. Like, I get cultural appreciation. I get this and that. But it's like coming and exploiting these people and exploiting the workers and ruining the environment that they're in and trying to make it more quote-unquote Americanized or modern. Like, that's not your place to do that.
They're not seeing it as, they're not accommodating for me, so I'm gonna change it myself. Yes, that's how they're treating it.
You know, if that's what you want, go back to the U.S. go back to the U.S. you enjoy yourself over there if that's what you want to do. You know what I mean? We live such a fast-paced life.
The country has a tendency to always insert themselves in situations and spaces that they don't really belong. And then when they fuck things up and the people try to rebuild, they insert themselves then, saying like, wow, this place is so great. It's like, yeah, not from your help though. And the example that I can think of is Vietnam. So Vietnam is a communist country. And I read an article, I think it was like a year ago, of a lot of older people from the U.S., some that haven't fought in the Vietnam War, they're retiring and moving to Vietnam. Why? One, the affordable health care that they fought so hard to keep from. And two, because the same, like, the money goes a little long, a little far or further over there.
Yeah.
So it's like you get mad that you lose, but you still show up and try to, like,
reap the benefits.
Yes. Like, tell me that's not imperialism.
Boy, I don't know. I don't know what goes through these people's heads. And I think that the thing that we need to realize is, I've heard people mention this about Hawaii, and a lot, Vietnam, and maybe in the country in Mexico. The way of life is different there. Yeah. Here in the United States, we have like a materialistic society. We want. We want a new car. We want a better job. We want to go on vacation. You want to pay for this yoga class. You want to put your child in the best childcare. You want to put them in Head Start. You want to put them in the best school. There's always this like competitiveness.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a thing there. To
get something bigger, newer, shinier. Yes,
that is not a thing there out there in those places. It's not materialistic. It's really day-to-day. Laid back, trying to feed your family, have chickens,
or just trying to live.
Yes,
they're just trying to live.
You're trying to, you know, you're trying to live, get through it day by day. There's not like an end goal. It's, you've made it. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. You've done the best that you can do. This is your life. There, of course, you do want, like, you know, I'm not saying that they're not ambitious. I'm not saying that they don't want things, but it's not like the competitiveness and the I want to be better than my neighbor and the materialisticness is not there.
Yeah.
And I think that's really strange to people. And they're like, oh, how third world of you.
Yeah.
How, like, it's what, like, what a very rural setting type of life you have.
As if, like, humble is kind of synonymous with, like, simple-minded, yes, type of thing.
Like La India Maria. Like, the character was made funny because they thought that indigenous people were so fucking hilarious because they're so dumb. Right?
They're like, oh, she doesn't appreciate what a dollar bill is worth. She's dumb.
Yes. It's like that, along the same lines of that. It's just very, like, what? How do you like, live with yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Like, how can you look at it and say, wow, like, I'm proud of this. I'm exploiting these people.
Listen, do not mess with Oaxaca, Guerrero, and Chiapas. That is one of the most beautiful parts of the world and in Mexico. Don't touch them.
I'm sorry.
Don't,
that's because you've never been to Durango.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
Sorry. That's because you've never been there to my beautiful desert state.
I haven't.
All my beautiful little scorpions. They're just baking out in the sun. They're like, hey, with their little booties out, their little stingers.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what have I been missing out on?
Hot. It's hot there. And Durango's a very big state. So there are parts that are like very subtropical. It's very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyways, back to what you were saying. Sorry, I like went off on a tangent.
Oh, there. No, that's okay. I feel like that's definitely something you would have wanted to share, or that you should have shared. I don't even know how to transition or segue into this next topic.
Just force yourself there.
Okay, so I miss the feeling of how gummy my hair got when I used to bleach it.
You were disgusting. There is something fundamentally wrong with you.
Do you remember when we lived at the apartment and I would have like a mental breakdown and just bleach my hair?
Yeah, and it was always like half, not the full thing. That's what
happens when you leave me alone for too long and I'm going through things. It reminded me because someone, I think it was a TikTok that I saw of someone bleaching some guy's hair. And they put a lot of it, and it was, like, foamy, purple, like, bleach. And they were, like, combing through it and, like, touching the hair, and it was, like, gummy. And I was like, oh, I remember that feeling. And then the next scene is that their hair, like, fell out. And
there was a bald spot.
Yeah, there was, like, a bald spot. I think I saw that video. Oh, I was like, oh, no, not that.
I don't know how people can do that.
I never burned my hair. But only because I was scared to get to that point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, your hair definitely got crispy crunchy because I would touch it.
Yup, it absolutely did.
And then that smell. And then, like, they're always like, use the purple soap. Use the purple soap. It makes the color better. And then, like, the smell of the purple soap, though, it feels like you're fucking putting bleach in your hair. It
smells like medicine.
It smells off. It smells like not for hair.
And I was talking about that. Well, now at my last job, I was like, now that I'm getting a new job, I'm going to try something different. What if I bleach my hair? And it kind of reminded me, I'm like, I kind of don't want to.
You know,
even though I was the one that said it and recommended it.
We were actually talking about that at work today. We were talking about, like, if your job and money was not like an object, what tattoos and piercings would you get?
Mm-hmm.
And Mel was like, none. I'm a pure baby. I'm a little wet baby seal that just glides around with smooth skin. And
that's good.
Me and Michelle were like, oh, it was because Michelle was talking about how she had her tongue pierced. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Michelle, you're bad.
She's a baddie.
Ooh, I wanted to be like you. And then I said something like that was inappropriate but funny. She thought it was hilarious. And it was just, we were just talking about that, but it was so weird. But I said, I was like, I would want completely gray hair like an old man. And I would want a neck tattoo.
Oh, me too.
I want some nipple piercings.
I don't know about that.
So, but.
I see that. I definitely feel like I would either bleach my hair like silver.
Love it.
Or like red.
Love it.
Like fire truck red.
I mean, we're a little late to the party. Remember when silver was like a huge thing, or like silver, like really light lavender, almost white?
Yeah.
Like 7 years ago?
It was right after the trend of people tying feathers in their hair. I remember that.
Oh, yeah. That was the beginning of the end for the feathers in the hair.
Yep. It transitioned right into the other.
Well, at least we haven't gone back to the straight bangs and the crimped hair.
Hey,
or the scrunched hair.
Hold one.
Well, I'm sorry. Those are a fucking
look. Like those glamour shots.
I know there's some tías that still do that, so I don't want to say that. So sorry, primas and primas, if you still do that.
I think my sister Carla and my cousin Claudia used to have their little friends take pictures of like glamour shots at the mall with their arching eyebrows and their scrunched up hair, but.
Straight bangs.
Oh my God. That was a fucking look. Or like they would edit you in like bubbles and like little lights. One of them, actually, my sister posted recently when she was younger. It was my parents and her, and they're put in like a wine glass.
Oh my god. Yes. Shots.
Like, girl, or this like, is a baby.
I've seen one where it was like really, it was like kind of blurry on a blue background. And it's, like, the boyfriend, like, in the main shot. Or, no, it's the girlfriend in the main shot on the bottom, but there's, like, bubbles. And in one of the bubbles is the boyfriend, like, really small, and he's in there floating in that little bubble. And it's, like, really blurry.
They were so
cool. Damn, we really thought we were eating. We were like, damn, she ate that.
Dude, oh, my God, you look so good.
It's giving what it's supposed to give, but it
does not. What did they say that? That's not even what they said before. What would they say? That looks tight. I don't know.
That's dope.
Dope is really that old?
I don't actually know. That's the bomb. Dang, oh, that picture's the bomb. That's the bomb. That's off the chain. That's off the chain.
It's off the hook.
Off the hook. Dang. Does anybody else remember old sayings like that? Sayings.
I'm going to have to call my sister.
Please send them to us on Instagram. We love to hear from you guys.
Yeah, it's going to keep me up at night. I'm going to call Carla right after this and ask her. She'll remember. Okay, next topic. Let's bring back men's rompers. I bought a onesie recently. I'm wearing it right now. Care to comment?
It's beautiful. I love it.
I look like a big baby.
You look like Ghostface running around the house. Chasing our cats, terrorizing them.
It's so comfortable. I wish it was a little thicker, but it's a big onesie. It's not footy pajamas.
It's from Amazon.
I should have gotten footy pajamas. But I feel like men's rompers, those were a trend that we didn't really appreciate.
You know, you say that, but my primas and my primas would know this very well. What? Wearing a romper out is a commitment, because if you gotta poop, if you gotta pee, you gotta take that shit off. You're fucking naked in a bathroom in a public restroom. Same thing with guys. They'd be naked, butt naked in that fucking bathroom trying to pee or poop or whatever.
The worst thing is being in a stall and someone fucking gorilla grips and shakes the fucking door as if they can't fucking see your feet underneath.
American bathrooms have fucking gaps between, so you can like
make eye contact.
Oh god. The most embarrassing thing is like walking into like a public restroom and like looking at a stall and then seeing the person like sitting down on the toilet in the crack and they're like smiling at you, and I'm like, bitch, no, don't smile at me.
This is not a smiling situation.
This is a funny bitch.
What's so funny? What did you
say to them? They're wearing clown shoes.
Goofy. Gorsh.
God gives his silliest battles to his funniest clowns.
You.
Literally me.
Okay, just a few more things before we move on to my story.
Oh yeah, I'm excited. It sounds interesting.
Okay, dream interpretation.
Okay.
We've talked about dream interpretation before.
Yes.
In my humanities class,
uh-huh,
one of the prompts for our essays or like discussions was interpret one of your dreams as to what it may seem. Because I think the topic was about Freud and how everything supposedly ties into like your parents.
Uh-huh.
And something about sex, I don't know. But one of them, some guy shared a story. I didn't do that prompt. I was like, I'm not fucking talking about my dreams. First of all, I don't remember a single dream. I've never dreamt. I'm lying. But this guy talks about how he was driving home and his friend was there, and he was driving to his house to meet his friend because he asked him to do insurance fraud. And that he said, yeah, he's like, yeah, I'm on my way.
Wait, is this a dream?
Yes.
Okay.
And there's a guy in my class, he was just sharing that. I'm like, why would you share this? You could have lied. Why bring up tax fraud? And I was like, that's such an adult thing. Like, not many people out of the adult range would kind of dream about tax fraud. Like, I can't imagine a child dreaming about tax fraud. You know what I mean? And me, as someone who is now 28, I feel like I can relate very much to that.
Do you have, like, adult dreams like that? Like, adult problem dreams?
I don't know. I don't know. But after he said that, I was like, that's an option? Like, to think about?
I always dream about, like, my fingers being bubblegum and people eat my fingers. And then I'm upset because I won't be able to use my hands. That's the type of dream that I have.
That's a real fear. I don't know. I feel like I'm going to be more on the lookout of any adult.
Yeah.
But adult dreams, but not like that.
Well, people say that it's a lot easier to remember your dreams or get better at remembering them if you start writing them down as soon as you wake up. So maybe that's an option. Please send us your funniest dreams.
Yeah, if you guys wanna send us your funniest dreams, I can definitely laugh at them.
The next English episode, we'll read our favorite one.
Or send them in Spanish if you want.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be funny too. So my story today,
uh-huh,
is La Casa Matusita.
Okay.
So some of my sources, a YouTube video by La Hora Muerta Empieza, a YouTube video by Terror Nocturno, a news broadcast on TV by Comunicación Audiovisual, Cuobra Travel article by Teresa Gales, a Living in Peru article by Michael Dreckschmidt, vocal media article by EA, anomalian.com article, Pasión Latina Montreal article, and Wikipedia.
EA, like it's in the game?
I guess so. So, located in Peru's capital city of Lima, La Casa Matosita is well known to the city's inhabitants as one of Peru's most paranormal locations.
Mm-hmm.
It is located in the intersection of Avenida Inca Garcilaso de la Vega and Avenida España. So according to local records, the house was built during colonial times and its first occupant moved in around August of 1753. This first occupant, she was a Persian woman named Parvane Dervaspa. Her arrival was mysterious as she didn't have any friends, relatives, or connection to the vice royalty in Peru. So I guess before you kind of moved if you knew any of those people, like if you were related to the royalty, if you had friends, relatives already living there, but she kind of just moved by herself. She was known amongst her neighbors as a dedicated healer against incurable illnesses and diseases, or I guess allegedly incurable. So that's kind of what she was known for amongst her neighbors, that she was a dedicated healer. And I guess at the same time, rumors began circulating within her neighbors that Parvane practiced black magic and brujería. So they had to fucking ruin it. So because of this, she was later accused of witchcraft by the Spanish Inquisition. And I just a quick side fact, the Spanish Inquisition lasted from November of 1478 to July of 1834, which is something I didn't fucking know about. Oh my
god, 400 years?
Yes.
Jeez.
I thought it was just like 4 years and 20 done.
Years.
I don't know.
2 days.
But 400 years, I'm like, geez. And because at the time, Peru was considered part of Spain, they extended that far, basically. So anyone accused of witchcraft, they would be off sentenced.
With their heads.
Yep. So accusers claimed that Parvane was aligned with the devil and other malevolent entities, and she was offering to cast spells and curses to the highest bidder. I don't know where they got that information, but I guess that's where locals were saying, like, yeah, I heard her talking to this rich guy saying that she was offering spells. I don't know. So she was arrested and tortured until she confessed to practicing witchcraft. And she, honestly, the confession was forced out of her because of the torture, obviously. She was then sentenced to death and was burned at the stake in October of 1753. So as the flames engulfed her, she cursed anyone that would set foot in her house. She said anyone that set foot in her home will feel the pain that she suffered at the stake. So I guess maybe she was a witch.
Oof.
But even then, why the fuck kill her? As a response to this, Parvane's house was burned. So they didn't have to, they just had to go that extra mile. So that kind of left where the house was, like in ruins for a while. So because of this alleged curse, no one dared to build on where the house had been before. That is until a few years later when an affluent but pretentious rich man bought the property and built a house on it. The man's name, it had to be a pretentious rich man. So the man's name has allegedly been lost to history, according to the legend, but he was supposedly very cruel to his servants, often being physically and verbally abusive to them. The servants plotted their revenge against him, so one evening the man invited a group of people for a dinner party. And I guess they kind of took advantage of the party. And the servants spiked all of the drinks with a hallucinogenic plant. Some sources say it was LSD.
My type of party, hey.
You're so annoying. And they did that kind of hoping to embarrass the man. After serving the drinks, they waited in the kitchen to allow the hallucinogenic plant to take effect. After some time, they heard laughter, but a few minutes later, they heard the sound of angry voices that became screaming, crunching, and ripping sounds coming from the room.
I don't like where this is going.
One of them opened the door to find the man and all of his guests ripped apart. They claimed that they witnessed a river of blood streaming out of the room, intestines scattered around the room, dismembered bodies, body parts, and bloodstained walls. So in their altered state of mind, the man and his guests had ripped each other apart with their bare hands.
What the fuck?
The servants ran out of the house, allegedly babbling from the traumatic imagery that they had witnessed.
So this is not my type of party, I'm sorry.
It is absolutely not anyone's type of party.
No.
The servants that witnessed the gore that day left screaming for what they caused. Some took their own lives, hanging themselves from the ceiling of the dining room for fear that they would be executed. Some had to seek psychiatric treatment for what they witnessed, and some were even sent to an asylum, unable to cope with what they did. Another version of the legend says that the servants wanted to spike only the man's drink with the hallucinogenic plant to cause his mind to deteriorate over time, with the first dose being given to him during the dinner party. So this version has the same outcome as the other, though.
Uh-huh.
That supposedly he ripped everyone apart with his bare hands. According to this legend, everyone that died that day never left the second floor of the building. So this kind of started the house's reputation that it was haunted, and many were afraid to even get near the house. After that, it did kind of just cause like an uproar around the city that those ghosts never left. A few years later, the house was purchased by a property developer. It remained abandoned for some time, however, for almost a century, when a Japanese man named Mr. Matsushita had recently relocated his wife and his two children to Peru. The family were unaware of the history of the house and its reputation in the city. They moved to the second floor and had the first floor repurposed into a shop to support the family. One day, Mr. Matsushita came home earlier than expected and found his wife in bed with another man. In a fit of rage, Mr. Matsushita murdered both his wife and the man with a kitchen knife. He allegedly waited for his children to arrive home from school, where he then murdered them as well.
Oh my god.
So he then made the decision to complete harakiri, which ended his life. And the thing is I only saw that in one source. I think they're like, he's Japanese.
Sounds great. Let's
write that in.
He cut his stomach open.
Like, he's Japanese. That's what they do. Like, the thing is, it was only one source, so I don't even know if that's 100% accurate. So
an aversion.
Yes. Yeah, an aversion is that he did that, but... all other versions is that he completed suicide.
Okay.
This one is just specific as to the method. So the house was later renamed after Mr. Matsushita. After this, there were many rumors in Lima claiming that apparitions would appear at the second floor windows if you walked near the building at night. Many claimed to see a Japanese woman staring down at pedestrians on the street. So the house was vacant for decades after that. The owners of the house at one occasion asked a local priest to perform an exorcism on the property so it could be sold. The priest blessed the house's first floor, but when he set foot on the second floor, he experienced a panic attack that resulted in his death.
Would you say that to me?
Sorry.
That is my ultimate fear, to die of a fucking panic attack.
Just do what I do and... forget everything.
Head empty. I can't do that. Sorry.
It's so easy. I was telling my coworkers that they're like, sometimes you're just like silent. And I'm like, if I'm silent, there's nothing going on. Head empty. It's just Donkey Kong 64 music up in here.
Not a thought behind those eyes.
Like Leo, not a single thought has crossed those eyes.
No.
I'm just kidding, guys. One of the most recent stories of this house happened in the 1960s. Humberto Viches Vera, which is an Argentine?
I would say Argentinian, but then again, I agreed with Maite when she said Salvadoranian. So don't believe me.
You're not reliable.
I'm not reliable. That man is Salvadoranian, okay?
Never mind. So, Argentinian TV personality and host of the paranormal TV show Los Fantasmas Se Divierten. So he made a bet that he was able to last 7 days and seven nights on the second floor of the building, completely unprompted. He would sometimes mock the building and any Peruvians that were scared of the building, calling it esa casa japonesa, or that Japanese house, which was kind of racist.
Oh, what a fucking asshole.
Supposedly, on the day of, he entered the building by himself, and after some time, he ran out screaming. Sources say it was only 2 hours, while some say 4 hours, and some say a day. He then spent the following year in a psychiatric asylum and another year in psychological care. Strangely enough, he fell off from the public eye for a while, but after a few years, he reappeared and wrote a book where he dismissed the urban legends of the Matsushita building. Sorry. So, the guy Matsushita, he's Japanese, but when it was transcribed over in Spanish, it changed a little bit.
To Matusita.
To Matusita.
I'm over here thinking about La Tusa, the song by, was it?
Carol G.
I'm over here like, La Tusa, hell yeah, La Matusita.
Shut the hell up. So he kind of dismissed the urban legends and claimed that he did the dare for ratings, basically.
Mm-hmm.
He also confessed that he never actually entered the building out of fear. So I'm like, why are you talking shit?
So what the fuck was the
Why are you hating from outside the club if you can't even get
in? How did he have a mental breakdown and didn't even go in the building?
I think he... Oh, yeah, that makes sense. I don't know. I think he lied and said that he never went in. I think he may have lied and just didn't want to admit the truth that he couldn't handle it. I don't know.
And then later he's like, nothing happened. I didn't even go in.
I was just kidding. I'm an actor.
I'm an actor.
So another man that dared enter the house was then gubernatorial candidate to La Victoria district, Mario Alvarez Vargas. And on October 31st of 2002, so this is recent, Mario climbed into the second floor window. He claimed that the moment he set foot into the building, he felt a very strong coldness around his entire body. Around 25 to 30 people, mainly photographers and reporters, went inside with him. Inside, they said it felt like traveling back in time because no one had dared to go into the second floor for years. They found abandoned furniture, clothes, children's toys, and what I thought was most interesting in the video is an old calendar dated of July 1947.
Interesting.
Mario recalls that a reporter was not taking the entire thing seriously and began to be rude, claiming that it was all superstition. When they were getting ready to leave, the reporter fractured his foot as he was stepping out of the window. And let me tell you. So the interview documentary thing that I watched, it was like a news, part of a news broadcast.
Uh-huh, yeah.
They actually interviewed the reporter. His name is Ricardo Dancourt. And he was like, yeah, I may have stepped wrong out of the window and ripped a tendon on my foot. And he said it so nonchalantly. I'm like, ripping a tendon on your foot is not an easy task. Granted, I've never ripped anything in my life. But it doesn't sound like it's easily rippable. But he was trying to be like so nonchalant about it. He's like, yeah, you know, I may have accidentally stepped wrong or something. But the guy that, what's his name? Mario Alvarez Vargas. He was interviewed too, and he's like, yeah, he wasn't taking it seriously, and the ghost punished him for it. I was like, ooh.
Wow, way to call him out.
Yup. After about half an hour of him being unable to get down the ladder safely, they called paramedics, and they had to get a crane to lower him to safety. Because of it being on Halloween and being at the Casa Matusita, many reporters thought it was fake, or as if it was, like, staged. And it wasn't until later when they finally realized it was real and all the news stations were reporting that the ghost had done it or that they had pushed him.
Wow.
That they were all reporting, like, yeah, a man fractures his foot after a ghost pushes him out the window. You know how stories kind of change like that.
Yeah.
So the reporter eventually left Mario by himself on the second floor to spend the night by himself. They told him, you hopefully come out of there alive. So the next morning, Mario says that he heard... It's funny because they were interviewing him and asking him questions as he was stepping down the ladders. I'm like, man, let my boy get off the ladder first. And he's like, what did you see? And he's like, it was crazy. I heard voices. I heard steps. I heard running. At one point, I heard children crying.
Ugh, the worst.
But it was a lot of nervous laughter that I could tell. But it was funny.
You know what? One thing that I will not mess with is children's laughter. Those are demons. Those are demons pretending to be kids, first of all. There is no such thing as a child ghost.
We've talked about that
before. Yes. I'm bringing it up again for our new listeners that may not be going back.
Oh, well, thank you to all of our new listeners.
Yes. Supposedly, children are like clean, free of sin, so they ascend. So when you see a child spirit, it's a fucking demon pretending to be a child.
Yup. So
supposedly
today, the first floor of the building has been repurposed and rented out to a business. The second floor is kept unoccupied and locked securely. Supposedly, a lot of people aren't allowed to go in there. One thing I should mention, I forgot to write it in my notes, but one thing I should mention is that there's a rumor that supposedly this house was never haunted to begin with. I know. Heartbreaking.
Uh-huh.
But supposedly, it was actually a rumor started by the U.S. Embassy that was located directly across the street from the building. That supposedly, it was a rumor they had started to discourage people from buying that building. So, like, any other foreign country would not gain access to, like, be a spy and, like, see directly into that other American embassy.
Okay, supposedly,
that was a rumor that was going around for a while that the U.S. embassy actually started it. But the article that I was reading, it was like, if it were true, and granted, the U.S. embassy was across the street, but if they had started it, why would they have chosen a Japanese name? Why would they have chosen, like, such, like, an outrageous story of the man or the rich man being poisoned and stuff like that? I mean, that's a possibility, but that's just a rumor, so. And that was the story of La Casa Matusita, supposedly Peru's most haunted paranormal locations.
Oh, wow. So you knew I was going to do a haunted house too, right? Right, yeah. I was telling you about it?
No.
So it's a haunted house in Peru, and there was a lot of videos going around in 2017 from inside the house. You saw them on Twitter because I saw them on Twitter. So that's what interested me. The reason why I didn't do that for this episode today is because after looking further, after 2 hours of research and notes, it was all staged by Sun, and it was like fact.
What? And he would have gotten away with it if it weren't you for meddling kids.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it was kind of interesting just because there was a lot of things going on in the house. Especially, like, a flying knife and the police being involved and getting attacked in the house.
Oh, I know what you... Okay, I remember. I know what you're referring to.
Yeah, it's, like, a house on a corner. And then, like, the video shot is, like, on the street and you see things flying around in the house.
It was recording the cops and they're like, shit, I'm not going in there.
Yeah, it was that house. Yeah. But supposedly it was the Sun.
What?
So... Maybe I'll look a little... I felt very discouraged after I saw that, so I didn't continue to do research. But it very well could have been, like, just now, where it was like, supposedly they say this. And maybe I was just looking too much into it.
But. The thing is that house, I think... That's an old video. Like, when it first came out that it was supposedly haunted, it came out years ago.
Yeah.
Like, it's not recent, is what I'm saying. So, wow, that's insane that it got debunked. Sad.
They boonched.
So, care to do the outro? Or did you have anything additional to say? Besides, thanks to all our new listeners.
Yeah.
Thank you to all of our returning listeners.
We want to say thank you, and we love you guys, to all our primos, primas, and primes.
And happy holidays.
Yeah.
Maybe you're listening to this before you have to walk into your aunt's house for Christmas dinner. So, we're proud of you for that.
Yeah.
Don't start a fight. It ain't worth it.
Why? Why not? Let's fucking do this shit.
Didn't we talk about
this? Let's put her in her place.
Put her in her place.
If she's toxic.
Kindly.
If she's toxic. If she's being, like, hateful or whatever. I know some people it's not very easy for some people to go home because they don't have a home to go to. They don't feel welcome. So, yeah. I'm very sorry. And... you're welcome in my heart.
Period.
Family is not blood. It's who you choose to be in your family.
Family's important. But also being around people that respect you is even more important.
So don't forget to put your mental health first and your physical health.
If someone were to call me overweight, I'm like, hell yeah.
Let's fight.
And what?
We're about to take this out to the parking lot. Just
leave them stumped. No, because I think last time there was a comment about...
you're getting a little plump.
They're like, you gained a little weight. And I was like, yes, that happens as we age. I could have easily said something like, yeah, you too. But I'm not down with the clackback. They're not ready for it.
Oof.
They're not ready. The atomic power that I have.
They would be texting your mom. He was so disrespectful.
And I'll call them and be like, is there something you'd like to say to me? I called
him fat, but it's just the truth, so that's not mean. But he was disrespectful back to me by saying I was fat.
Did I lie? You know what? Never mind.
We're airing out some dirty laundry just on the podcast. Just let you know.
I can clap back, but that doesn't mean What I'm saying is, with great power comes great responsibility. Oof, the clap and although you have the power to clap back, you also have the power to just brush it off. Like I said, family is important, but having people around you that respect you is even more important.
Let's not clap back. Let's clap forward into the future.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what you said. Let's not clap back.
Let's clap forward.
Clap forward into the future.
Thanks.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. Please follow us on Instagram at GetSpookyPodcast and on Twitter at GetSpookyPod. Also, email us any story suggestions or your own scary stories at GetSpookyPodcast@gmail.com. Special thanks to Taylor Turner for the artwork and Kyle Fields for the intro music. Don't forget to tell someone you love how much they mean to you this holiday season and this happy new year. See all of our English listeners a couple episodes from now, but everybody that is Spanish, hispano hablante, see you next month.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, to all of our English listeners, see you guys in February for Valentine's Day. To all of our bilingual or Spanish speakers, see you guys next month.
Bye.